Kentucky Psychologist, a podcast brought to you by the Kentucky Psychological Association. The Kentucky Psychologist will get into the minds of top psychologists from Kentucky and occasionally friends from across the country. We'll talk about what leading mental health experts are interested in and excited about. Hear about all the ways psychologists in clinical practice, research, leadership, and applied settings are doing to improve and save lives. All right. Thank you all so much for joining us on this episode of the Kentucky Psychologist. Today, we have Dr. Rachel Buhner with us from Louisville, Kentucky, who works in forensic psychology. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today, Sam?
I'm doing well. We're excited to have you here today, and we'll go ahead and get started. Why did you get involved with KPA?
As a graduate student at the University of Louisville about 200 years ago, I decided that I wanted to meet more people who were trying to get involved in psychology around Kentucky. So I was great friends with a bunch of my colleagues in the program, but I wanted to kind of see what the next steps would be and how to understand continuing education, understand who's doing what in academia, and really to understand what sorts of jobs were out there. So it was just a way for me to get connected. And our professors sold it to us as this is a way that you get to know the people who are actually doing the work. So that's what felt great about it.
What roles have you had now that you've been in KPA since you were a student at U of L?
Sure. So I've volunteered at a conference. I have been KPA's Greater Louisville representative. Now that's the Ohio Regional representative for a couple of years. I was KPA's president in 2021. So my term lasted from 2022 through 2022. And I'm currently the chair of KPA's Communications Committee. And I think I was just appointed to KPF's board also. So yes, many hats.
Yes, many hats. Staying involved where we need you. So a little bit, just to talk about where you were at KPA. So what was your deciding factor to pursue a career in psychology?
So my senior year of high school, we took a semester of psychology, and I was given a term paper project that we chose the topic about from the proverbial top hat. She literally put out a top hat and we chose the topics, and I got the topic of a certain serial killer, and I started doing some research on this individual and wanted to do a good paper, kind of understand their background, how they got there. And something just awoke in me in terms of trying to show up for children, show up to for families in a way to kind of prevent it from happening again. So I sort of made the decision in high school that I'd like to do something to help children from having to ever experience the kind of abuse that that particular individual apparently endured. And that's how I got started.
That's crazy. There was just a drop or pick of a hat, and then here you are now. Yeah. What were some challenges that you faced starting your career, or that you might still be facing while you're in your career now?
You know, I think graduate school and then getting started in your career and finding your place, finding your roles that feel right to you, it sort of feels much like life, like there's just one obstacle after another, and there's so much preparation that goes into passing your comps and then finishing your degree, finishing your dissertation, passing the ECCC. There are so many obstacles that at the time feel insurmountable, like so much pressure. And while you understand that it's a common experience for your colleagues and that many have gone before you, it still feels like, can I make this next thing? It just feels unrelenting. And so I think just persistence and perseverance and realizing, like, I really do want to do this type of work, and it's going to take a little bit more work on my part. Just do the work today, do the work today. And it really pays off eventually. But there were certainly moments along the way where I thought, I'm going to quit it all and go work at the Gap.
Well, we're glad you didn't quit and stay at the Gap. I'm sure you'd still be just as fashionable, but we're glad that you're here doing your mental health services for Kentucky. What is something right now that you're doing, maybe like in psychology, within your workplace, or maybe on the boards that you serve on, that's really exciting right now?
So Sam, I've gotten involved in doing a lot of social media work related to mental health. So when I was beginning my term as president of KPA, so my first year where your sort of lead up year to your presidency, we started seeing that the pandemic was happening and everybody had to switch over to working in telehealth. A lot of us had to switch over to working in telehealth if we weren't doing it already. And so there really was this feeling for a lot of us at the time that there are too many people who need us and we can't get to them, even with telehealth opening doors and bringing us people who might not have ever sought out therapy. I know that within myself, I felt a real ache that there were so many people out there struggling, children, families, all of us, with questions about how they're doing and not understanding the processes that they were going through emotionally. And so it kind of awakened in me this sense of, how do I reach people? Like, how do I teach people to understand the feelings that they're having in their minds, with their feelings, with their behaviors, with their motivations, et cetera. And so it occurred to me, like, a simple way to go about this would just be to start thinking about, like, what are some of the important moments in my therapy work with folks, like some insights that people build or some knowledge that I'm able to impart that really have been powerful in those therapeutic experiences across my career, and kind of taking from those and sharing those with social media. So I've developed an itsy tiny little following of people who want to know more about anxiety and want to know more about self-esteem, or want to feel like they know how to talk to their children about their children's mental health. And it's been really powerful and fulfilling for me. I feel like I'm able to reach people who otherwise would not access therapy to learn some of this stuff. So that feels really great to me. It feels like a way that we as clinicians and academics can really get to people with some of our expertise and not gatekeep things that may actually bring up the mental health of our communities.
I love that you're making it, like, more digestible for, you know, an outside user, opposed to, you know, throwing out, like, clinical terms. So if you don't follow Rachel, we'll tag all her stuff in, but it's so
great. It's great. If you, I get these messages from people where it's, you know, I had that talk with my daughter last night, or I appreciated you phrasing it that way, or, you know, just recognizing that now they understand that the processes that they've gone through in the past about something, whether it's trauma or self-worth or just understanding how to be a good mom and like yourself a little bit better. Like, that kind of feedback tells me that people don't understand this stuff instinctively. So anything we can share about how to understand the commonalities that you have and the processes that you go through, and frankly, to just like yourself better, it feels really good to be doing that work right now.
That's powerful stuff, Rachel. You're really showing up for this community. What do you like most about all of your current jobs, all the hats you wear? So where you're at in forensic, where you're at on the board, what, you know, can you give a little bit about each of those, like, what, you know, you like most about all of those?
So I think having a variety of experiences throughout the work week, throughout the month, over the course of the year, where I'm not just doing a simple 9-to-5 job, and I'm privileged to be able to kind of spread things out a little bit into a few different roles. And I certainly understand that, but being able to do a variety of things brings me different levels of sort of fulfillment and energy. So my forensics work is really challenging, and I've taught myself a lot, and I've gone to a lot of trainings, and I've enjoyed that process of doing that kind of work. You're not necessarily trained toward that in graduate school. So that's been an interesting learning experience and part of my career. And doing therapy work with folks is sort of different from forensics. Forensics is often people are interacting with you at kind of their worst moments. If they're doing something that's court active and you're involved, there's a likelihood that they're not too, too happy about it. Whereas in therapy, people are really actively over the course of weeks or months or years trying to grow and learn and heal. And that feels really nice to be part of. And then over on the KPA side, or I'm on the board at KPF and also Families for Effective Autism Treatment here in Louisville, you're able to see progress and help facilitate progress for large groups of people to think about ways to improve the experience for clinicians, for children, for families, to impact policy, to advocate with our legislators. Like, you're really able to think about, how can I make this world a better place? Like, how can I just play a small part? Where can I take the skills that I have, the capabilities that I have, and put myself in front of the right people so that people's lives can be better? Like, you really are able to affect change. And that feels really good at a big level, you know?
Yeah, that's really awesome that you're able to, you know, spread it out and get that fulfillment across the other places. Like you said, not having like a typical 9-to-5, but able to wear many hats and, you know, really share your expertise and what you can bring to the table. Who were your prime influencers? Was there like a certain psychologist? Was there a certain professor? Was there a family member that really helped, you know, you see your career off to where you're at now?
Dr. Barbara Burns is a former faculty member over at the University of Louisville. She was in the Department of Psychology and Psychological and Brain Sciences, and I took a couple of courses with her. And she had a real eye towards service. So she had us in volunteer work as part of our coursework over there. And just a brilliant researcher to work with, a gentle nature about her, a sense of respect for students who were coming into the field, recognizing our potential and really believing that she could help us kind of make change happen and see how research impacts kids in schools like right now. She had us in there doing projects to, you know, do survey data and that kind of stuff. And it was really exhilarating and energizing to be part of and to have somebody treat you like a colleague versus, you know, flexing on the power differential. And that was a really powerful experience for me. She made a big impact on me.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about like your values as a person, as an employee, and how they impact where you're at in your career?
Sure. I'd say professionally, I'm probably guided by a service orientation. So my father and my mom kind of instilled in me a sense of, you know, you need to work your job, but you also need to be doing something to make sure that you're helping people who need help. Like, if there's a need, you need to be prepared to listen for it and help out where you can. So I think I balance my week and the way that I do my work and the jobs that I take, Sam, to be honest with you, with I need to make a living. I need to pay back my student loans, but I also need to make sure that if I'm not doing enough to help my community or to do something to help out through volunteer work or, you know, leadership positions or something, like I need to try a little bit harder. There's more of me left. So as I've had my family, my husband and I, you know, we've noticed ourselves like we don't have quite as much energy for, you know, all the professional stuff. So I've also learned how to kind of balance that, all that stuff with family life and set boundaries around protecting that. And so I can really, one helps me be grateful for the other in a very big way. So my family, you know, my children are aware of my roles with KPA, for example, and they tell people, you know, my mom was the president of something. They're not sure what, but they just like to say that. So, you know, they're seeing me work hard. They're seeing me teach them that, you know, we have to try to help out where we can and do what we can with what we've got. And sort of carrying on that, they're carrying on that motto of, you know, be kind, take no crap. So, and that makes me really proud.
Sounds like you're doing exactly what your parents were doing and showing that side of service and your kids are seeing it at an early age. And right. I think that's amazing. Do you have anything that's like unique to your work approach? Like, is there something specific that like that you do that maybe others don't do, or you found that like you saw someone else doing this, you're like, wow, I'm gonna like piggyback off of this and like implement this into my work and how I conduct things?
With regard to my therapy work, I'd say that a recurring theme that I know my clients would point out about me and that they experience in our work is just learning to like yourself a little bit better, looking for the places in your life where you treat yourself poorly, or you talk to yourself poorly, or you accept poor treatment from others, and noticing kind of where that comes from and understanding those parts of yourself, those parts of your history, and yet realizing that you're worth more than that, that life is worth living and enjoying and not suffering. And so working hard at self-forgiveness and self-compassion and kind of noticing how it happens, how it shows up, being able to understand what's happening, being self-aware and mindful in that moment, and being able to treat yourself better. And that's how I help people, I think, over the course of these years, kind of actualize change within those therapy relationships. And I'd say that approach, that's kind of how I try to interact with people across the board is, you know, let's just do good work. And I'm assuming good things about you when we do our work together. Let's move from there.
That's something that should be instilled with a lot more people. So I'm glad that you're doing that work and hopefully that's being pushed out into the community as well. So you quickly touched on one little side project that I heard outside of KPA and KPF. Are there any other side projects that you do that impact the community or anything else in your life?
Bit of, you know, volunteer work here and there and fun stuff, you know, so Girl Scout co-leader, and I just signed up to be an assistant coach for soccer because I will have to learn about soccer from YouTube because I don't know about it. But you know, they don't have a team without a coach, so so little things that matter to my kids, if I can be part of it so I can know about what they're doing and know who their friends are and try to just continue to have those sort of shorthand things with us. That's really meaningful to me to be a part of their lives in that way. So, you know, sign me up. for those different experiences. And that brings me a lot of joy that, like I say, that offset from all the professional work, especially, you know, therapy and forensics can be tough work sometimes. A lot of sometimes dark subject matter, or just a tough week, or, you know, taking on people's stuff, which again is a privilege, and I'm happy to have the job, grateful for it, certainly. But it's nice to be able to offset that with throwing on your coach's hat and packing the cooler and going out to soccer fields.
I don't forget those orange slices.
Yeah. Juice boxes, man. Holy moly. Yeah.
Are there still goals that you are hoping to achieve in your career, or even like personally?
Yeah. So I'm hoping to open a private practice of my own here in the coming months. So that's on the horizon, and doing the work to kind of put that together and enlist support from some of the women in my life who've gone before me and know what they're doing. So that's one thing. And just trying to continue to sort of balance work and family in a way that feels fulfilling on both sides, and that I'm not depleted, but I'm giving the best that I can to both. And as I mentioned with the social media stuff, I'm really excited about some of the places that that's allowed me to go and some of this work that I'm able to do there. It started out as just a little side hobby, and now I find it's part of my day, part of my week, that makes me feel like I'm really reaching people. And that is such a good feeling. It really answers, like I mentioned, that kind of call inside of me, and so many people hurting right now. And that feels good to know that I'm doing something.
Yeah, you never know who's gonna be receptive to that message. And it's huge, like what social media is able to do now, and who you're able to reach without even knowing someone. Do you have like a work mantra, a life mantra that you live by, or something that you try to, you know, instill besides your, you know, your need or your act of service?
You know, I've just worked really hard, Sam, at self-awareness and being aware of sort of mentally when I'm in the red, when I'm overwhelmed or depleted, or if there are moments throughout the week or month where I continue to kind of feel like I'm not enough or don't have enough in the tank for whatever the activity needs me. So just becoming better and better at that as a parent, as a professional, as a person trying to do several jobs and show up well for each of them. Just being aware of when I need to take care of myself. You know, when you finish graduate school, you just want so hard to get a job and you want to please everybody. And it's very much like, you know, working overtime and doing all the things to pay your dues. And, you know, when you have a family and you're trying to do everything right, still there does need to be that balance, and it has to be a process that's not thrust upon you, but that you're doing for yourself. Otherwise you just resent it. So I'm working really hard at, and I'm not perfect. I'm not even close, but just trying to get better and better at living the balance and showing up where I'm supposed to show up and taking good care of myself while I do it.
I think that's super important. What is one of the ways, I know there's a million out there, that you think psychologists are making this world a better place?
I think psychologists can help people understand themselves and help organizations and entities and governments understand how to make the world a better place. So to take off the rose-colored glasses, I think that there are conversations in boardrooms and conference tables and legislative sessions where a psychologist can help those in power understand the needs of those out there, the people out there, and help them understand needs, help them understand outcomes, help them understand why we do the things that we do and how to help make people's lives better. I think that we have a place at the table for so many different things. And so, you know, I in my own work, I really kind of work with people on, like I said, self-esteem and understanding yourself a little bit better, self-compassion, self-forgiveness, that kind of thing. But I have an understanding when I read the news, or when I understand a story that's going on or something that's emerging. You know, my training, my years of doing this, my education has taught me, I have an understanding of why people make the decisions that they do. And I think that's really powerful information that's sometimes missing from the conversation. So, you know, one of the things that we've tried to do at Communications Committee is really help for the public to understand psychology concepts and mental health. And I think doing more of that work as psychologists, like being prepared to take our expertise and help the public kind of understand themselves a little bit better and help with wherever that power differential is, for the people in power to understand the needs of those who they govern or they lead, I think that we belong at the table.
That's awesome. How do you think psychology, or you know, how you practice, has changed since this pandemic that we've been through?
Well, I think obviously we shifted to telehealth, and I was doing a little bit of that prior to 2020. So I didn't have to, you know, get started once things were moving in that direction for a lot of folks. But I think we've seen telehealth, the numbers look good on outcomes, and people relate to us, and we have access to people that we wouldn't have normally had, people who wouldn't have accessed therapy in their small towns, or can find a clinician who does exactly what they need and looks the way that they want for them to look, or they can, whom they can relate to. So I think it's opened a lot of doors, and it's brought us clients who might not have sought us out previously. I think too, that it's been isolating for a lot of us as colleagues. So, you know, where we used to have CE and convention, and it was just a given that you're gonna go and you're gonna interact with your colleagues and shoot the breeze and establish those commonalities and just remember why we're doing this and how nice it feels to be together. It's been isolating. I'm thankful for even the Zoom meetings and things like that, because I noticed those can be really invigorating. You leave one of those meetings where it's like, we're doing good work, we're trying really hard to help people, and we've got great ideas and we're gonna move on them, and that feels really nice. But it certainly was isolating, and I found myself, you know, I got to be friends with folks at the gym. I got to know the guys who restocked the produce at Kroger. You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of had to bloom where I was planted. And so I think there is that, like, it taught me to be valuable for the connections in my life and to nurture those. But I am happy that we are starting to interact more and have more opportunities to just rub elbows and remind ourselves, like, why we're in this together.
Yeah, that sense of community. It didn't waver, but it's definitely coming back in a, I think, a more fuller way.
Yes.
More appreciation to it.
Absolutely.
We're starting to wrap up here. What advice would you give to someone that's, you know, maybe starting their career in psychology, maybe a little bit in, or maybe even someone that might be like deeper into their, you know, career? What advice would you give someone to, you know, stick with psychology and like fill that need of a psychologist?
You know, Sam, I left graduate school with the expectation that I just need to find a 9-to-5 job that has benefits. You know, I need to lock it in a very kind of a mentality of, you know, I'm going to have the one career, and that's the way that it is. So I need to find the thing. And that feels very dichotomous. There's either a right decision or a wrong decision. And what I came to realize is, I'm not happy doing just one thing. And I know it's, again, a privileged take to be able to sort of figure out where I belong, but I shifted to correctional psychology as soon as I got the opportunity, because that was uniquely challenging. And I got to do work that I had some experience with and during my training, but really get in there and do that kind of work. And it opened doors to me for me to do other things, including the forensics work that I'm doing now. So I think that flexing that understanding of your self-reliance, like, I can count on myself, whatever happens, whatever opportunities, you know, show themselves to me, whatever failures that I encounter, like, I can trust myself to weather the bad stuff and figure out what's next. And there's something great waiting for me. And had I had that understanding or had that knowledge getting started, things might have looked a little bit different for me. I might not have put myself under such pressure. You go through all this training, you go through the internship process or whatever it looks like, the world is your oyster. You are gonna graduate a generalist. You can do lots of different things, understand lots of different mental health issues. But if there's something you wanna try, go get the training, go get the expertise. Like, you can follow whatever path starts to feel right and develop for you. You can trust yourself. Just figure out what it is that you wanna do and understand that may change over time and be okay with that. That's really assuaged a lot of my kind of professional anxiety. I've just really learned to trust myself.
I think that's a super valuable advice, is trust yourself and know that change is okay. Things may change. Your trajectory might take a complete
turn. Things are gonna change. Things are gonna change. You can rely on that, and you can rely on yourself. So, you know, that's a big part of anxiety treatment and the work that I do, Sam, is helping people understand, you know, the difference between fearing a thing that is going to happen versus fearing yourself, your reaction to the thing that's gonna happen. You're afraid you're gonna be scared. You're afraid you're gonna feel silly or feel stupid. but we forget that we can rely on ourselves to weather change, to weather crises. We forget that we show up for ourselves. And so I think just realizing that as the years went by, as my career started to develop, whatever happens, I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to enjoy it. I'll find my way.
Yeah. Embrace it. Yeah. It's part of the journey.
Yeah.
All right. So I have one question that I didn't send to you ahead of time. This is just a little fun question that I'm ending all of our podcasts with. If you were put on a stage tonight, what would be your go-to karaoke song?
Okay, so it used to be I Feel Lucky by Mary Chapin Carpenter, which is kind of niche, but you know, some people know it and it's a great one for karaoke. But I have found that I can get a higher pitched voice if I need to, and it is now AC/DC's Thunderstruck because it has a great lead up and it really gets the crowd going. So that's my walk-up song. If I ever go to make Major League Baseball, that will be my walk-up song. So now you know.
What a song, Rachel. That's awesome. I love that. All right. So do you want to tell the listeners about where they can find you on socials? Anything sure. of that, where they can find you, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, where can they find you?
Sure. So on TikTok and on Instagram, I am Bring Light Psychology, all one word, Bring Light Psychology. So no matter how the chips are down, bring light wherever you can.
I love that. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Kentucky Psychologist. And we hope you all enjoyed this episode. Thank you, Dr. Beener.
Thank you for having me.